thank you for listening to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. My name is Carrie Rabideau, and I'm a Youth Development Extension Educator. Today's topic relates to the words and phrases we use in our programs that we can at times unintentionally use, and they exclude young people when our true intentions are to include. To share the ideas about this topic of what we are calling gendered phrases make unsafe places is my colleague, Joe Rand. Thank you for joining me today, Joe.
Thanks for having me back, Carrie. I'm excited to be here and share some easy strategies in order to make our programs safer spaces for LGBT youth.
Well, you know, you referred to being back here. This is your third podcast with me. I so appreciate you coming back and talking with me again. I always learn so much from your insights and your experiences. If any of you out there have not listened to a podcast with Joe before, I'd like to invite you to check out episode 20, which was Relationships, Role Models, and LGBT Youth. And then way back to episode 12, where you talked about for LGBT youth, those safe spaces can be hard to find. So I hear in all of those that there's a theme here of finding inclusive, safe places for our young people to participate in our programs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we can do a lot in order to make sure that we are checking our behaviors and our words and those biases that we have in order to make sure that when we're doing programming and when we're in educational spaces and spaces that are supposed to be supportive for youth, that we're inclusive for all of the kids that are there.
Okay, so before we dive real deep into our topic today, for those who haven't listened to a podcast before, Joe, will you please tell us about yourself and your work, and then tell us why getting us, you know, into this specific topic of the words and phrases, why did this specific topic surface for you?
Sure. So again, my name is Joe Rand, and I'm an extension educator in youth development, and I work in St. Cloud, Minnesota, in that region of the state. So it's primarily a rural place. I live in Becker, Minnesota, which is also very rural. We only have about a population of about 5,000. And I do some work at the school, at the high school there in Becker as well, in addition to my extension role. And one of the things I do is I work with the GSA there, and there I don't run it, but I am a supporter of it. And I work with a lot of those youth in other ways through theater and speech, and try to do what I can to advocate for those kids at Becker High School. But then I've also been able to use that information and knowledge in a broader sense in order to help our organization and other youth workers make the spaces in which they work more safe for those kids, and hopefully help give them some strategies and help them think about the ways that they do things in order to create change in their own spaces. I think where the sort of impetus for this blog post was, I was at the first of its kind conference in Ohio. It was 4-H LGBT Youth Summit back in the spring. And it was the first of its kind for our organization, which I think is huge that we're going in this direction, because it feels like in order to stay relevant and to make sure that we are progressing as an organization, we need to be inclusive of folks from all walks of life. And so making sure that our LGBT kids feel included and feel like it's a safe place for them is one way we can do that. And I realize there's lots of other ways we can do that, but for my context, this is the one that's real important and really is a passion for me. So I was really excited to be a part of that conference and to learn a lot from colleagues from around the country. One of the things I heard was, and that I've thought about, but you know, never really hit right at my core before, was that being an ally requires action. What were the actions that I could take, that I could offer for others to take, even in small ways, in order to be an ally and in order to create safe spaces? And so one of the thoughts I had was really just about language, because I think about it a lot and I hear it a lot and I experience a lot myself. that's one of the ways our implicit bias comes out, and one of the ways that our binary heteronormative society does have bias against our LGBT folks. We talk about male and female a lot, and we talk about mom and dad a lot, and we talk about things that girls do and things that boys do. And really, it's not just that. And there's a lot of space in between those two things. And just because something in society is attributed to being masculine or feminine doesn't really mean that that's the truth. And so I think it's important for us to realize those things, especially when we're doing programming with our young people, to be able to check some of those things. So I offer four easy strategies and ways that we as youth development people can start to check our own behavior. And I say easy because they are simple, but they are not easy in practice. And I will tell you right off the bat, I screw up with all four of these all the time. So know that while they are simple, they are not easy to do, because we have learned our entire lives to use binary ways of labeling things. And so this goes against, for me, 37 years of education in my life.
Yeah. And Joe, that is something that I appreciate so about you, and why I learned so much from you, is it's the real part. And that they're simple things to do. They're not easy things to do, but they help increase our intentionality. And I'll just note right before we dive into these that you had written a blog post on these four action strategies, and people were commenting that, wow, you just added skills to my youth development, youth worker toolbox. And that's why I'm excited for you to share with us and maybe expand on a few of these today as well. Let's start with the first one. You suggest that we think of ways to separate groups or label activities other than boys over here, girls over here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way we do it, right? We learned that in kindergarten. We learned that in preschool. That's how teachers did it. So as youth developers, we've learned that. That's how we do it. And in some instances, that's fine. But there also might be kids, youth in our programs that don't feel like they fall into one of those labels. And don't know exactly where they should go. And the research shows us that forcing them to choose one or the other can be damaging. And so we really need to think about other ways, because why do we need to separate youth into boys and girls? We don't, in most cases. We just do it because it's easy. But there's a lot of other ways we can separate kids. Birthdays, favorite colors. There's so many other ways we can do it. And so thinking about what those are can be really fun for you as a youth developer and for kids, but it can also, just starting to implement that simple change can make a huge difference for those kids who may be struggling with their gender identity. If we can just put one of those, you know, decide that, okay, I'm not going to use boys and girls anymore. I'm going to use birthdays always to separate kids, or I'm going to always use favorite color or, you know, numbering off or whatever that is. If you can make that simple change and start to make that a habit, you potentially could change the development of a young person who's struggling with their gender identity.
The other thing I like about this strategy is not only for those young people who may be struggling with which gender they identify with, but it also, for all of the young people, they find other things in common. Oh, your favorite color is blue too. Look at us, we have this. What is your favorite food? It is also a group building activity as well as an inclusive safe space activity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the more I think that we can do that and make those associations for kids, the easier it's gonna be for them to develop friendships and relationships. So if we can do that, this is a simple way to do it. It's going to be hard to break our habit, but I know you can do it.
The second one that you suggest is not assuming that all young people have mom and dad. Forms that go home, have your mom sign this, we're going on a field trip. Make sure your mom and dad look at this. Something that our school does is muffins with moms and donuts with dads. And it's so common. How do you react to that?
Yeah. And I think that is, you know, it's tradition. Like, I remember doing those things when I was a kid. And I think my parents remember doing some of those things when they were kids. So that's something that we've just done for a really long time. The problem comes when a youth doesn't have a mom or a dad or both, and maybe they live with grandma and grandpa or aunt and uncle, or maybe they have two moms or two dads. And so what are the ways we're being inclusive of those families when we have a mom's breakfast or a dad's breakfast? Or what are other ways we can uplift families in general and not continue to say that a family is a mom and a dad and a kid? Because we have so many non-traditional families. And this goes well beyond our LGBT families and youth. But there's so many kids who are single parent families or are adopted or, again, might live with a different relative. And I think it's important to uplift those families, those different types of families, and not always assume it's mom and dad. And so one of the easy ways we can do that is try and change that language to caring adult or something similar, guardian. You know, we've heard the term guardian for years. That's something that you can use too. You know, when I think of this mom and dad, I think it is one of those things for me, even as a youth developer, that I know I say, especially when I'm with younger kids, those elementary age kids, I use the phrase moms and dads all the time. And I have to be really careful of that, because that's not always the case. And you don't know what you're going to bring up for a youth by all of a sudden saying moms and dads. You might have excluded somebody, but you also might be bringing up some really painful stuff for a kid that they're having to deal with.
I had an experience that brought this to light for me. My husband and I moved in with our three nieces while my brother and sister-in-law were deployed. And we lived with them for about 9 months. During that time, our oldest that we were taking care of was a second grader. She came home from school one day very upset. And as we talked it through, the reason she was upset is because she wasn't going to be able to go on this field trip because her mom and dad weren't here to sign her form. And I said to her, you can go on the field trip because I can sign it for you. I'm your guardian. But because in school, it had been have your mom or dad sign this or you can't go on the field trip, that set her on this path of really upset for the rest of the day and struggling with that because my parents are in Bosnia. They're not going to be able to sign this paper tonight. When you talk about that you don't know what kind of emotion you're setting in a young person, rang true for me, and something that I, as you say, it's a simple but not easy, because it's easier to just say everybody has a mom and dad.
And that's what we've learned, you know, and so I totally get it. And I make the same mistake because that's what we've grown up with. But if we can make that change and prevent that young person from being upset because she doesn't feel like she can go on a field trip, mm-hmm. or that they're weird because they have two dads or two moms or live with grandma and grandpa, we should do that. It's our job to do that as youth development professionals, I think.
Your third action step to help us have a more inclusive youth program refers to how we name the young people we're working with. And your what you said is stop using the phrase, you guys, come on over here.
Yeah. And I think in the Midwest probably is where that's most prominent. And I do it all. I catch myself every day when I'm working with people or kids. I say, you guys, and then I go, oh, hold on. I need to change that to something else. I think not just because there's an assumed gender there that somebody might be upset about, but also because it just doesn't feel as respectful as something else could, like you all, or hey, friends, or hey, youth, or, you know, if you have a group, you know, of kids who are together for a like reason, you know, you can say, like, when I'm directing theater, or if I'm working with my speech kids on the team, I might say, hey, team members, or hey, cast. And I try to do that, and I screw up all the time. It feels like it's more respectful and also more inclusive. So I think there's dual purpose there. And I think that that's why it's important.
So those first three action steps are ways that, kind of referring to the way we talk and the ways that we handle how we work with young people. Your fourth one is referring to our responsibility to speak up when we hear words or phrases that seem to discriminate against others.
Yes, I think this is probably the most important one. And it's the hardest one for all of us, because I think we are caught off guard when these things happen, and often think about them after the fact and go, oh, I wish I had done X. I wish I had said something or done something. And so the best way to not be caught off guard is to just start doing it. Like, take the chance. And even if you don't react in exactly the right way initially, you're starting to combat some of those things that are hurtful and could be hurtful. The easiest way to do that, if you're in a group or you're with a group of young people and somebody says something that, you know, the examples in the blog I give are no homo, or calling somebody a tranny, or using gay in a derogatory way, or calling somebody a fag, or any of those things. You know, the easiest way to do that is to just stop what's happening and say, hold on, we don't use language like that in this group because it's offensive and not appropriate. And then move on and not make a production of it. But you've called the youth out that has used that language, so they know not to do it again. And the whole group knows, you know, you've set a boundary for that whole group that we're not going to use language like that. And language like this or things like this are going to be addressed. So this is a safer space for me, hopefully. And then part two is that once you're done with that public setting, you need to have a conversation with that youth about what happened so they understand why what they did could be offensive or was offensive, and that we're not going to allow it in our group. So there's sort of a two-part way to handle a situation like that. If you feel like there's been more damage done, it might be something you talk about the next time. But I think it's real important to set the boundary and move on.
I think that strategy is really helpful, because so often, as you said earlier, we know we should react. We know we should say something, but in that moment, we don't know exactly how to handle it. So I appreciate that two-part approach. Know that it's okay to just say right there, this isn't how we talk, this isn't how we treat people in our program, move on. But then that private conversation later, when you're able to, I can imagine you'd be able to think about what you want to say to this young person and how you can make it an educational moment rather than reacting to it at the time that it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's probably, it maybe even now that I'm thinking about it, is a three-part, because there probably is some follow-up with the kid who that derogatory language was used against. I mean, you're all great youth development professionals. You know what needs to happen. But I think thinking about that two-part strategy and having that sentence ready to go so that when it happens, you're used to saying, we're not going to use that language here. It's offensive, and moving on, and making that a habit will help set those boundaries and make those kids feel safer. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, again, this is another one where it goes beyond our LGBT kids. It's really for all youth, because there's so many ways that youth are facing those offensive words and phrases and ways that they're being discriminated against for whatever reason. And so the more we can set boundaries and stop those behaviors from happening, the safer they're going to feel. And hopefully that changes their behavior when they leave whatever group we're in. And that creates change on a broader spectrum.
Well, and they see how you modeled a way of talking about it and, you know, being respectful while you're saying this is a respectful place. I'm going to be respectful of you, but ask you not to use those words in this space. So what a great model that that shows for young people so that they can use that in other spaces they're in.
Yeah, I think so. And I think thanks for bringing up the modeling, because I think that's really important. And it'll be really important if those kids are going to be successful in using those strategies outside of whatever group it is that you're leading, because maybe they hear that at home, or maybe they hear it in another group that they're involved in, but maybe they can now go to that group and say the same thing. Say, you know what, I'm in this other group and we don't use that language because it's offensive. And so I don't think we should use it here either.
Those gendered phrases that you've talked about, we grew up with, that they were a part of our common language, and we now understand that it's not helpful. It's not, it doesn't make me feel safe. It doesn't make me feel included in this space. So we're changing what those norms are. We're changing what the words are, and modeling that will change what our young people say in the future.
Yeah, and it's gonna take time, and we're gonna screw up. And don't get down on yourself if you screw up, because like I said, I mess up all the time. But being aware of it, and still trying will make a difference. It does make a difference.
Well, Joe, I thank you for joining me today. You are such an incredible resource to myself, to all youth workers. And I want to thank you for your willingness to share, to teach, to learn with us, and to be an example and a model for all of us youth workers. So I thank you for joining me for your third podcast.
I'm so glad to be able to do it. I hope some of these are helpful to our youth development professionals that are listening. If you have other strategies, we'd love to hear about them. Go to the blog post and throw those on there, and I'll respond to them. I would love to hear from people about what other things they're doing in order to create safe spaces for youth.
As Joe just mentioned, we have information on our website, www.extension.umn.edu/youth, for more resources on being inclusive in your work and working with diverse audiences. And as he mentioned, check out our Youth Development Insight blog. He has a few posts there for you to engage in conversations. And we'd also like you to check out our Minnesota 4-H program, because we're pretty proud of that. And the work that Joe and others are doing are making that a fantastic out-of-school program for youth in Minnesota. That will wrap up this podcast. My name is Carrie Robidoux. I'm joined today by Joe Rand from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.